maximizing investments for financial and community gain. Investors all hope to see a good return on their investments, but some investors are looking beyond just dollars and cents. They want to see an impact on both their bottom line and in their community. There are different ways to accomplish this. Some people shun certain kinds of stocks, such as tobacco, firearms, and alcohol. But others have taken the idea a step further, with a proactive approach referred to as impact investing. It's a relatively new form of investment. There are different kinds of funds that allow just about anyone to participate. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're going to learn the ins and outs of impact investing and how it can and does affect communities right here in Maine. Putting your money where your mission is, next on Maine Calling. But first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Last year, a Gallup poll revealed that slightly more than half of all U.S. adults, 52%, of an investment in U.S. stocks. But what are they looking for in those investments? Obviously, financial gain is a prime driver, but more and more Americans are looking to invest in funds with a positive impact on society as well. That's called impact investing, and today we're going to learn more about it. In our studio, Liz Rogers. She's a senior vice president at Coastal Enterprises Institute. Nicole Davis is a partner and wealth manager with Veris Wealth Partners. Anthony Eames is Director of Responsible Investment Strategy for Eaton Vance. As always, we want to hear from you. When you invest, are you looking for more than just an increase to your bottom line? What else are you looking at? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Nicole, I'll start with you, and I want to ask you the broad question. When we're talking about investing, what is an investment? What do we mean? Is it just stocks?
Sure. No, I think it goes much broader than that. You know, at the basics, so you're usually in capital, your money, and doing typically one or two of two things, either buying something, so like a stock or a mutual fund, or lending that money out. So you can think of a bond as just, you know, simply a you're lending money and going to get paid more in the future. And there are certainly mutual funds, both of stocks and bonds.
Okay. And impact investing, define it for us.
Sure. And it's simply those investments that you're making for beyond a financial gain. So you want that financial gain, but you're also looking for an investment that has a social and environmental return as well.
Okay. I'm going to turn to you, Anthony. 25 years ago, I remember reading about socially responsible funds. Is impact investing the same thing as buying a socially responsible fund? Do they intersect? Give us a little history of where we were then and where we are now.
Yeah. Great question, Jennifer. I think that they definitely are related. I would say impact investing is sort of a subset of the broader theme of socially responsible investing or simply responsible investing. If you think back on the 1970s and the 1980s, that was really sort of the genesis of the modern era of responsible investing. And companies like Pax World and Dreyfus and Calvert and Domini were early players in the space back then. It was very much around sort of negatively screening certain issues or certain companies. So initially, it was the Vietnam War, and then it was wanting to avoid companies doing business in an apartheid South Africa. The late 90s saw the tobacco industry, states were suing the tobacco industry to try to help them to get payments to settle tobacco-related illnesses. The early 2000s, we saw corporate governance really come to the fore. So, companies like Enron and WorldCom and others became part of our lexicon around those issues. And then more recently, the financial crisis. And so I think what has happened is that we've evolved away from negatively screening out companies based on industries that they're in or sort of the traditional sin stocks. And today it's much more about identifying companies that are doing terrific things through their business, through the products and the services that are really trying to address some of the pressing issues that we have in society and the environment. So,
Liz, I know that CEI does a great amount of work in Maine. What are some examples of where impact investing has helped projects in Maine, has made a difference in this state?
Yeah, so I think you can hear what Nicole and Anthony are saying, and and understand that that is that what they're talking about is really what's happening at the stock market or capital markets level. But there's a whole array of impact investing that is happening at the community level. And in this large world of impact investing, we often probably logically refer to this as community investing. And this is exactly what CI and organizations like us do. We aggregate capital. So we borrow funds or investors invest in CI because they are looking not only for a financial return of some sort, but also for a social return. And typically that social return is in the form of a social benefit, jobs creation, or environmental benefit.
So, are these projects that might be difficult to fund otherwise?
They are often projects and frankly, businesses that might not be able to get capital from other sources because the business owner might not have a line of credit or a credit history, and a bank might, or another investor might feel that these are investments that would be a little too risky. But when we pick our investments, we're really looking not only for projects and businesses that will be financially viable, because ultimately we do have to pay back the money that we're borrowing, but we are also looking for this return on mission. So I think often they are, and we have to screen. One way that we mitigate risk is to surround the financing that we provide with business and financial advising services. So we're working very closely with the businesses and projects that we invest in to make sure that they are successful.
So you're not just giving the business a loan, but you're helping make sure they succeed.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, let me ask you this, Nicole. Anybody who's a wealth manager is in the business of helping your clients maintain and grow their personal wealth. Is it often a difficult sell to say to people, you might want to think about this kind of fund? It's going to give you less of a return, but it's going to be in line with your values?
It's not a difficult conversation at all. So our business is 100%, you know, devoted to impact investing. So it's part of the reason.
So people come to you
exactly.
For that reason. Gotcha.
But just there's been a lot of, I think, the myth that impact investing, you'll get less financial return. And that absolutely does not have to be the case. There are certain situations, you know, Liz mentioned with community investing, where someone may choose that route. But it's usually their total portfolio is somewhat of a blend. So in the capital markets, so in their stocks or bonds, you know, it's been, really numerous studies out there disproving the myth that you'll underperform with impact investing. And, you know, performance is really just can be just as good. You certainly have to do good research as you would with any investment. And, we touched upon community investing. We touched upon, you know, the public stock and bond market. And then there's also, private equity markets. And in some areas, you know, so it's been proven that you don't have to give up returns. And then there's the philosophy that in some of these areas, you might actually outperform because of these environmental, social, and governance characteristics, where you're looking at companies that if you have a good management team that's looking out for these issues, paying attention to their impact on the environment, paying attention to how they treat their employees, they're just sort of a better management team. It's sort of a proxy for identifying those and are better able to, manage any challenges they see going forward and are typically a little bit more forward thinking and looking at the long term. And so that's kind of the thesis behind you might be able to even outperform or at least avoid some risks out there.
Anthony, walk me through the process, because I think the traditional type of philanthropy most people think of is to make as much money as they can in their portfolio so that they have the kind of money they can give away in the way that they want. What is the different kind of thinking between, okay, I want to be able to donate a gym to my college campus, then, well, instead of doing it that way, I'm going to think about impact investing?
Yeah. No, I think there's a huge demographic shift that's occurring right now. I think with the and certainly as with when we interact with investors and advisors who work with investors, perhaps this was not as attractive to the patriarch and the matriarchs of a family, but it is to their kids and to their grandkids, the inheriting generations. And while the old mindset might have been, let's maximize return and then we'll set up a foundation or do something great with our money, you know, at the end of our lives, people today, they don't want to wait. They want to do good things with their money and achieve that competitive financial return at the same time. And I think, as Nicole was saying, you know, what was once anecdotal evidence is now really empirical evidence that companies that have strong that manage their sort of corporate responsibility well benefit in the financial markets. And then there are now savvy financial portfolio managers, financial advisors who can build portfolios to help really help clients reach their goals and not have to leave anything on the table. And so I think that we're certainly seeing driven by millennials. We see it driven by female advisors by and large. Doesn't mean that there aren't some men male advisors out there with an interest. There certainly are. But I think that, you know, there's just this growing body of evidence that you don't have to do one or the other. You can have your cake and eat it, too. You can invest in some of the leading companies in the world. I mean, to think about the capital markets, you know, Google is a great example because they are actually achieving their goal this year of sourcing 100% of their energy needs from renewable energy. And they're doing that because it's a financially attractive thing for the company to do. It's also what their customers and their constituents and their employees would like them to do.
So are there companies that are a little tricky? The one that pops to mind is Walmart. Walmart does some things that a lot of people object to, but other things that a lot of people support, such as reducing packaging and putting pressure on their suppliers to reduce packaging.
Yeah, Walmart is a great example because they have the opportunity to really exert incredible influence, not only on their own communities, but also on their competitors by adopting more responsible business practices. And we've seen that. That's actually, there are 22 companies of the Fortune 100 have committed to sourcing 100% of their energy needs from renewable. And Walmart is one of those companies, and they're going to be doing it over the next several years. You know, that alone, they use more electricity, you know, than many countries do out there. So the fact that they're sourcing their electricity from renewable is fantastic. And then the influence that they can have all the way through their global supply chain, is fantastic. You know, improvements that they make in terms of, you know, sort of labor conditions, has just really a tremendous influence, not only in their own communities, but again, sort of across the capital market, because they put pressure on other companies to adopt the same sort of, practices.
Liz, I'm looking at a national statistic that says that assets under management by organizations engaging in impact investing rose 76% from 2012 to 2014. That's nationally. Are we seeing the same kind of rise here in Maine? Not the same numbers. We're not talking trillions, but the same rise in the amount of money going into impact investing?
I don't know the answer to that question exactly. And I would say that just based on the amount of assets in Maine and the amount of money flowing in and out of the state, that we, just like other economic factors, we may not be, at the top of that trajectory. But I can say that certainly interest in our work and the kind of work that CEI does, I mean, anecdotally, I can say that is growing and that there is a lot of, I mean, I think that we can certainly relate to the kind of impact that a multinational might have on the daily lives of Mainers. But there is a lot of interest in and concern for the business owners that make up the backbone of Maine's economy, and that is our small business owners. And many of them are also doing their part in trying to support the environment and also create decent jobs for the people in the communities that they live in. So having that flow of capital, I just think that there is a lot of interest, and unfortunately, I don't have.
That's okay. You don't have to have exact numbers. Yeah. Just wondering, are you seeing it?
Yeah, I was just going to say same. I don't think there's a lot of measurement of dollars specific to Maine, but I think the national trend is very prevalent here in Maine, and you can even see some leadership in that regard. So Unity College was, I believe, the first institution to divest the college endowment from fossil fuels. So that's just, you know, one of the many flavors that impact investing can take. But we're really out there and urging other universities to do the same.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. You mentioned that because that was one of the questions I wanted to ask. Is there a difference between impact investing and avoiding certain stocks? And the note I had to myself is such as the divestiture movement among colleges and the college endowments. Or is it, again, a subset of the bigger, same bigger picture?
No, I think, classically, sometimes people think of impact investing as sort of non-public investing. It's not investing in large publicly traded companies. It's investing in sort of startup companies, more venture capital, and then also doing some of the community finance, that organizations like CEI and others do. But I think that what most people's investments are in the capital markets. They're in, you know, large publicly traded companies, and the expectation and the opportunity for investors to realize impact is absolutely there. We've started to do that on our own portfolios, measuring things like, you know, are we generating less carbon emissions with our portfolios? Are we using less water? Are we voting our shareholder advocacy, our shareholder resolutions 100% of the time to support climate-related resolutions and sort of environmental, social, and governance resolutions? And so I think impact is something that we are all looking for. It's sort of the holy grail. We want financial returns that are going to help us reach the goals that we have, to be able to retire, to be able to put our kids through college, to have a comfortable retirement. And then we want to support the companies that are making significant impacts through their businesses, addressing some of the challenges we have. And then for us to be able to point to kind of measurable, reportable impact metrics like the ones I'd mentioned around carbon and water usage, I think is where, you know, investors really want to be. I think that's the aspiration that most investors have.
Liz, connect the dots for us. If someone's listening to this program, or let's say somebody lives in a community where they know about a business that's been helped by CEI or a housing project, and they say, I want to invest in a CEI fund. Is this something that someone can go to Nicole and say, I want to make sure my investment goes there? Or does it not quite work that way? Do you have to be a certain kind of investor?
Well, in full disclosure, and I should probably just go ahead and do this, we are a public nonprofit organization, and we are exempt from SEC regulation with some of our products because we are mission-driven. We are a nonprofit, and we also agree not to advertise. So I can't, I think I do have to punt that question over to Nicole.
Okay. So, Nicole, if someone's hearing this conversation today or is familiar with whether it's a CEI project or another project, knows that that project's made an impact, that community comes to you and says, I want to invest in this. Is that something that an individual can do?
Sure. And different individuals can participate at different levels. And so, you know, some Verisk works with high net worth individuals, so individuals with $2 million or more portfolios. So that's, you know, a much smaller portion of the public. And we certainly can invest with different community development financial institutions. So the CEI and similar organizations, and there are a number across New England. And there's varying degrees of who can invest, and some of them are open up to, you know, making investments as little as $1,000. And, you know, that works much in the same way as a bank CD might without the federal insurance component. But there's also ways to do it through a bank. So they have different community banks that you can, for instance, just buy a CD at, you know, very low amounts. So I think the way participation looks is very different depending on the size of capital you have to invest. But, you know, we talked a little bit about, at the smallest level, whether your 401k, how is that invested? Or, you know, are you a member of your local co-op or, you know, these community bank CDs? So there's a bunch of different ways, whether you're an affluent individual or not, to get involved in impact investing.
Okay, we do have to take a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a question about the idea of impact investing, call 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Jade Integrated Health, collaborative acupuncture, physical therapy, massage, and yoga in Portland and Brunswick, jadeintegratedhealth.com.
On the next Fresh Air, my guest will be Senator Al Franken. He's written a new memoir that explains how he went from his work on Saturday Night Live to his work in politics, and how after years of learning how to be funny, he had to learn how not to be. But the book, it's pretty funny. I hope you'll join us.
And you can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Danny Moody of Winthrop and Dan Jaguar of Manchester, along with Danny's dog Daisy and the Maine Public Radio app, are hiking the Appalachian Trail this summer. You can follow their progress on the Maine Public app or at mainepublic.org. Just click on events and here and there and back. As they make their journey north back to Maine, they are writing about their experiences and sharing pictures here and there and back with Danny, Dan, and Daisy at mainepublic.org or on your Maine Public app.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Impact Investing. Joining me in our studio, Nicole Davis, who is a partner and wealth manager with Verus Wealth Partners. Anthony Eames is director of responsible investment strategy for Eaton Vance. And Liz Rogers is a senior vice president at CEI. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, David Stone, the founder of Forager. David, I understand Forager is a platform that connects growers with buyers. Tell me about it a little bit more than that and why you're calling in on a show about impact investing.
Thanks, Jennifer. And I think one of my team members was on your program a couple weeks back about local food and farmers. We are a social mission company. My background is I founded several other profit companies and raised a lot of venture capital. So this is my first endeavor as a social entrepreneur. And I'm calling in because I wanted you to hear the entrepreneur's perspective. And, of course, CEI also just made a recent investment in us. Thank you, Liz.
You're welcome, David. Yeah, happy to do that.
And I'm also coincidentally penning an article for the Philanthropy Journal on social impact investing. So it's a topic near and dear to my heart. Really quickly, Forager is focused on making locally sourced food more widely available to all and to increase and accelerate the local food economy, which is very important to Maine and the Maine farming community, where we are leaders in locally sourced food, far above the national average. What I'll say is, you know, impact investing is really essential for the success of social venture.
David, you're sort of fading in and out. Are you on a speakerphone or losing your signal?
No,
I'm
not on a speakerphone. Is that better?
Yes.
Or not?
Go ahead.
Sorry, us entrepreneurs don't have landlines, so we have to use cell phones. So what I want to say is impact investing is really important for us social entrepreneurs. You know, we while profit is important, we're much more motivated by our impact. And we try to be change agents, and we're motivated by that desire. You know, I think what I've learned is, you know, I've raised about $1.1 million here over the last several years, primarily from wealthy individuals, affluent individuals, and I've had to educate a lot of them. You know, these people are used to giving to their favorite charities, but not used to necessarily in investing for profit. So, you know, we're educating them. We see more family offices, more private individuals investing in social ventures, but we need to spread the word. We also need to get more and more foundations to look at for-profits like ourselves. And, you know, it's just really important for Maine and the local food economy to get the support of others like CEI and other social impact investing. But it's a really exciting area that I think offers a lot of opportunity. And we look forward to, you know, getting more support from social impact investors like CEI and others.
David, thanks so much for calling in. David Stone is the CEO and founder of Forager. Liz, he just gave us an example of one kind of project, a business that's trying to have a good social impact. What are some other projects?
Yeah, so our businesses and projects that we invest in are really aligned with our mission, which is to help grow good jobs environmentally sustainable enterprises and shared prosperity. And we've been around since 1977, have financed thousands and thousands of businesses throughout Maine and in rural regions throughout the country. So CI outside of Maine is really known for being a leader in investing in rural regions and also in natural resource sector industries. And I'll just list off a couple that are probably well known to your listeners. Toms of Maine, Stonewall Kitchen, Gelato Fiasco, Fork Food Lab, Revision Energy, Oceans Approved, Acadia Harvest, and one that I'll just tell a little bit more about, which is the Mayo Mill, which is located in Dover Foxcroft. And this was a mill that had been decommissioned. Many people in the Dover Foxcroft area had had jobs over generations at the Mayo Mill. Recently, it was abandoned and empty and right in the middle of town and considered a bit of an eyesore. But we had a developer come to us and want to redevelop this property because it's in a rural location without a lot of economic development. It was considered somewhat of a risky investment. So we were able to put together a financial package with probably about 13 different partners, including Bangor Savings Bank, the Genesis Fund, and the Maine Community Foundation to redevelop the property. It has all the aspects of mission that we would want. It helped to create jobs. It has 22 affordable apartments. It's part of the Maine three-ring binder, so there's a data hub there. It's also now powered with 100% renewable energy. There's a boutique hotel and a little restaurant there now, and has really changed that community. I was talking to someone over the weekend who lives in Dover Foxcroft, and she was just gushing about, I think kids now go there to study after school because there is this data hub and they're able to access high-speed internet.
We're going to go to Heidi, who's calling from Southern Maine. Hi, Heidi. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes. Hi. How are you? Thank you so much for all that you do at Maine Calling. We really appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
I'm wanting to know if it's better to stay in a company that you know is, like, if it's better to divest or to stay in a company that you know is doing corrupt business practices and to be able to advocate, through shareholder advocacy. Can you discuss a little bit about that? Because every month I call into Verizon, which I know is invested in a lot of different things that I don't like, but I've been with them all these years. And I always tell them, please, and I write in my checks too when I pay my rent and everything, please, no investments in fossil fuels or nuclear defense industries, and please invest in a clean, green energy economy, one in which all whose workers are given positions earning more than a living wage so that those people transitioning from those industries that I don't want them into will be able to live comfortable lives.
Sure.
The way they'd like to.
Sure. And go ahead, Nicole. The question that investors have between divestiture or trying to be activist shareholders.
Sure. And I think that's a really personal question of, you know, where you want to draw that line in the sand of can you just not participate anymore, or can you try to create this change with the company, as Anthony mentioned, with shareholder advocacy that I'll explain in a little bit of detail here. But simply, when you buy a stock, you are an owner of that stock and have, by being an owner, have a voice. And so it's great that the caller's, you know, reaching out to Verizon, but also through your investment portfolio, you have what's called a proxy. So you're voting your share as an owner of the company. And you can do that if you or, you know, let's say a mutual fund you invest in has $2,000 worth of the company have held it for 1 year. And that's really been behind a lot of the change you've seen with companies, whether it's the voting portion of it or it's just the group of impact investors going out and having dialogue with company management. and saying, you know, these you have this you're a pretty good, let's say it's a pretty good company. They have pretty good management and they have a couple of issues like all companies may. And how do you help them improve their corporate behavior?
Is there a way for impact investors to find each other if they're invested in the same company?
It happens largely at the kind of mutual fund scale. And there are certainly some organizations that do help. So As You Sow is a nonprofit.
As You Sow, S-O-W?
That's correct. And they do a lot of shareholder advocacy and work on different campaigns. And that's been really these groups of impact investors and the shares they represent have been really instrumental in some big changes. So, you know, something that's really, I think, relevant to some of the folks here in Maine is I believe it was last year, different impact investing groups, you know, a lot of times they do work together, got a commitment from, you know, Lowe's, you know, the home improvement store around neonics. So neonics are the pesticides that are out there they believe are causing sudden bee collapse, calling collapse disorder, which, you know, really does affect Maine. You know, they pollinate two-thirds, bees pollinate two-thirds of agricultural crops, including apples, a lot of berries, maybe potatoes as well. So Lowe's committed to labeling the plants in their garden center that were treated with neonics as well as, you know, the eventual phase out over time. And so that was kind of the first commitment. And then the investment community was able to use their commitment and to get Home Depot to even kind of one-up them and, you know, stop spraying these pesticides on anything in their garden center and eventually stop the sale of any neonics on their shelves.
All right. Heidi, thanks for your question. We have a Facebook question from Robert. You use the term impact investing in a broad way, which I've heard described as also socially responsible investing. I think of impact investing as more targeted, e.g., helping a particular cause to achieve clearly measurable outcomes, which is more proactive than just investing generally into or away from some sectors. Could your guest please discuss the difference, if any, between impact and socially responsible investing? Anthony, I'll give you that one.
Yeah. So I think so we have a definition at Calvert, which is part of Eaton Vance, that the definition of responsible investing should be, first of all, let's generate performance and help folks reach their financial goals. Let's build a research process, a way to really evaluate sort of companies' impacts on society, positive and negative, and ensure that we're investing in companies that are offering a net benefit to society. The third is this advocacy work that Nicole was just talking about, being an active and engaged shareholder. And then lastly, it is trying to deliver impact for investors that is measurable and reportable. I think in the public investing space, it's a little bit trickier, but you can evaluate things like what kind of emissions are companies producing, how much, you know, the way of natural resources are companies using to you know, manufacture whatever product they have or the service that they deliver. So I think you can absolutely think about impact in the public investing space, investing in the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, investing in fixed income. When it comes to, and then there's also private impact investing, which is, I think, what he was talking about. And that is where you identify the CEIs and some of the organizations out there that do venture capital investing, and you can do it with the help of an advisor like Nicole Advaris and others out there who have access to some of these sort of startup companies that have a product or a service that's beneficial to society, but they need sort of early investment. It tends to be higher risk, obviously, right? Because some of these things don't pan out. But it is very impactful because this company has some sort of a product or service that is really delivering impact and it is solving an issue out there. So I would expand the definition on impact to say you can deliver impact, you can achieve impact in the public investing space, but you can absolutely, certain investors can access private impact investing as well. And that's where you're going to have terrific measurable impact.
Liz?
So at the community investing level, I would say that I can't think of a single funder or investor in CEI that doesn't have a requirement around impact. And many of them have very specific impacts that they're looking for, and a lot of them are not necessarily the same. So we are collecting data on many, many different areas that we are measuring, and it might be jobs creation. A lot of our funders and investors are looking for low income impact. So How many low-income borrowers do we have? How many of these businesses are starting or growing in areas that are considered low-income or distressed or rural? How many low-income employees do they have? And not only that, but then taking a step further and at that point of investment, what is the status? But then over time, can we begin to demonstrate that these investments are having, that are increasing the number of jobs for low-income people? Environmental impact is also significant, and we're always working harder to try to not only, as I said, measure that point of investment impact, but also the impact over time. So has this improved the environment? Have we been able to maintain or expand the working waterfront? Different investors are looking for different kinds of things, but I would say that all of them are looking very specifically and proactively for impact.
We do have to take another quick break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Roosevelt Campobello International Park. Discover the new Adventure Center, gateway to hikes, bikes, and drives, FDR.net.
The Netflix show 13 Reasons Why is about a teenager who commits suicide. In response, students at a high school in Michigan shared stories of friends who helped them.
Thank you, Alexa, for being the bright light in my dark time. You are one of the 13 reasons why not.
Talking honestly about teen suicide this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. And join us at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling for Speaking in Maine. We'll head to Northport and the Midcoast Forum on Foreign Relations for a talk by Chaz Freeman, former Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, and former Ambassador to Saudi Arabia. He'll discuss the U.S. role in the Middle East. That's Speaking in Maine coming up after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, investing for both your bottom line and your community. Joining me today, Anthony Eames. He's Director of Responsible Investment Strategy for Eaton Vance. Nicole Davis is a partner and wealth manager with Veris Wealth Partners. And Liz Rogers is Senior VP at CEI. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Freeport and Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I have an IRA that is in a money market and languishing in a money market. I have found a green fund of stocks that I'm pretty happy with investing in, but need to balance it with the bonds. And I wonder if your panel has any recommendations.
So, unfortunately, we are not allowed to give any investment advice or recommendations, SEC laws and such, but we can point you to some resources. There are
Perfect.
A couple of different sites out there that, do a good job of not only displaying information on the financial side about, different mutual fund options, but also what, the different screening criteria. www.socialfunds.com is one, as well as www.usSIF, so that's USSIF.org, which is the Impact Investing Industry Trade Group, has a listing of funds, so you'll certainly have to either go to your investment advisor or do some of your own research around there. But those are two pretty good resources to check out.
Yeah, that's great, Nicole. And I was just going to take the opportunity to bring up, I think, what Nancy raises, which is oftentimes people think of responsible investing as equity investing, buying shares of companies. But it's just as important on the fixed income side as well. I mean, as we get closer to needing the money, it is prudent to have more of a diversified portfolio, including fixed income. And there are ways that we can evaluate whether it's companies that issue bonds or other organizations, mortgage bonds, asset-backed securities, And so I laud your interest on the fixed income side, too, because I think oftentimes we think about it as just this stock market type investing, but it really applies to somebody's entire portfolio. And there are some terrific resources out there on the fixed income side as well.
All right. Thanks, Nancy, for your question. We'll move up to Bangor and Larry. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi. Very happy to have this topic on the air. And when I think of impact or social responsible investing, I don't think of the stock market at all. What I think of is the nonprofit organizations like CEI that's on the air now, but there is also Genesis Community Loan Fund is a good one, Four Directions Development Corporation, Cooperative Fund of New England. And these are nonprofits that really that keep the money in the state. They benefit our communities directly, you know, new and stronger local businesses. I know CEI and Cooperative Fund do that, and Genesis does affordable housing. Four Directions works with Maine's Wabanaki tribes. And they may not offer always as high an interest rate, but I think they aren't as susceptible to economic downturns, like the stock markets. They tanked pretty badly in 2008, so people lost a lot of money at that time.
Larry, thanks for your call. And, you know, we got an email also from Jenny who wants to talk about the Genesis Fund, a nonprofit community development financial institution based in Brunswick supporting affordable housing and community facilities development all over Maine. Go ahead, Anthony.
Perhaps, Liz, you can talk specifically about Genesis and some of the other companies. I was just going to say that this whole notion of community investing, which is using capital in a creative way to provide financing opportunities and the ability to fund low-income housing projects, essentially try to include the people who are left out of our traditional financial system, people who can't walk into a bank and borrow money to start a business. That's who the community investment sort of community investment organizations are really supporting. And there's been long kind of a mission at the national level. We have an industry group called the U.S. Sustainable Investment Forum. And there's long been a goal to have at least 1% of people's portfolios invested in a community investment way. And I think to invest in local organizations to keep the money right here in the state to provide critical financing for people who can't borrow money because of their socioeconomic situation, I think is a terrific goal.
Yes, I would just say thank you to the caller who brought up those wonderful colleagues of CEI's community concepts, Genesis Community Loan Fund, Four Directions, and Mainstream Finance, and even the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund and the Vermont Community Loan Fund. We often work in partnership with these organizations and really value having their work in the community alongside ours, because they may be focusing their investments in a specific way and taking the lead on investment, whereas sometimes we take the lead and they partner with us.
Larry, thanks for your call. And this is also related to another email. We have another partner I know of CEI's at time. Jen writes, the Maine Community Foundation has been involved in impact investing for almost 10 years, including being a partner with CEI and other community development finance institutes in Maine to support downtown and economic development, farms, fisheries, and food. We have found that individuals with donor-advised funds like the idea of not only making grants to support nonprofits working in these areas, but the ability to make a larger investment through loans. Do any of the presenters have any comments on the scale of what is possible when a person thinks about affecting change with dollars they invest versus dollars they might give as charitable gifts?
Sure, and I'll take that one. So typically, foundations have to give, they're on the hook to give away 5% of the money they have. And so effectively, if they're not doing any impact investing, 95% of their portfolio is sort of inactive in terms of their mission or perhaps even working against their mission. So we see impact investing as a real way to have 100% of the portfolio working towards the social good there or the environmental good they're trying to achieve. And certainly, through they mentioned the donor advised funds that I know the Maine Community Foundation and some of the other community foundations have are all starting to offer choices within that. So you can invest kind of a traditional manner or, you know, with impact. And usually those impact portfolios have, you know, what we call impact across all asset classes. So they have, you know, some component of direct community investing, like through CEIs and their colleagues, you know, some in the capital market. So it's rarely an all or nothing. It's usually a combination of this community investing in the traditional capital markets, you know, but looking at them through this environmental social lens, and perhaps even investing in, you know, the startups and the private equity space.
Another email, this one from Eli. I believe in investing in my neighborhood, ideally through my local community bank. My hope was to place my savings in a savings account for supporting other community bank members. However, the returns for bank savings accounts are very poor. I remember getting returns of 9% or more. Now it seems as though we are being forced to invest in the stock market. Considering the horrors of 2008 and the issuing of the concept of fiduciary responsibility by Wall Street, I'm not about to trust Wall Street or financial advisors. Are there any banks with decent returns in savings accounts, or is that a thing of the past? Is it possible to have a better savings return from a bank outside the United States?
Well, I mean, I'll just offer that. I mean, we have essentially the monetary policy of the Federal Reserve to thank for where interest rates are, and a 9% savings rate or on a CD or something is it's been a long time since that happened, and it's going to be a long time into the future. So unfortunately, because of the kind of the low interest rate environment that we have, it does encourage investors, which is often a prudent decision, to diversify into a variety of asset classes. So into the stock market, into the international markets, into fixed income. But I think it's critical that community investing, whether it's in the form of a community bank CD or the community investment options like we've been talking about, that that's part of the mix. Ultimately, none of us are in a position to be able to offer advice. I understand.
You're not going to say which bank.
Certainly can't say which bank, but, you know, you can do a lot of research online. Ultimately, I think many investors do feel like they're ultimately served best by seeking the advice of a financial advisor. There are a lot of terrific ones out there who can put together a very thoughtful, comprehensive plan to help people realize the impact that they want to have through their investments, but also, put together a smart plan that will help them, you know, reach their financial goals that they have.
Okay, we're going to go to Bonnie. Bonnie from Freeport. Hi, Bonnie, go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering, with all the interest in crowdfunding of various kinds, Kickstarter and these various things, how would you compare impact investing to these various crowdfunding operations?
I think a lot of the goals are the same. We would distinguish Kickstarter from an actual impact investing because you don't get a financial return. But there are also that, you know, most of your return comes in the service of goods that you are then funding and they return to you. But there are some crowdfunding platforms that do allow for some impact investing. They tend to have pretty strict rules on who's allowed to participate, and those rules are really made by the SEC.
And the law has changed just in the last year, especially here in Maine, hasn't it?
Yes, and they have gotten more lenient. And so previously, any private investments were really subject to what's called an accredited investor hurdle. So a $1 million net worth. And that is slowly being relaxed in some places. But I think that, you know, there's the regulation, which is one thing. But I also think really prudent is as people, you know, enter these platforms, it's about how much risk you can take. And, you know, a lot of startups are not successful. And so I think it's no place for just because you're allowed to do something may not mean you should. And really careful considerations of not just the positive impact you can make, but the financial portion is important.
All right, Bonnie, thanks so much for your call. I'm going to go to a Facebook post from Kristen. A comment to build on Liz Rogers' last remarks: to know the sort of impacts your investment are making, you need to actually know your investment to know what you own, so to speak. But it's not always simple. Prospectuses are difficult to read and to pull apart the individual holdings with any given mutual fund. There is no central independent rating to define positive or negative aspects. The investor needs to be active to be successful.
You absolutely have to be active. I would say that there is a roadmap that you can use to sort of evaluate what investments have out there in terms of how they're organized and the kinds of companies they're invested in. So, like, you know, most responsible investment companies' websites have holdings actually online, so you don't have to dig through the prospectus. You obviously should look at the prospectus, but you know, for our funds, for instance, our holdings are updated on a monthly basis, and you can see exactly all the companies, and that's true of many of the other responsible investment companies as well. I think you also need to make sure that there is you know, sort of intentionality, because Morningstar, which is the big mutual fund analytic tool, is now actually, they have something called the Globe ratings. And so mutual funds have actually Globe sustainability ratings, 1 to 5 globes that mirrors their star, 1 to 5 star system for performance. But they don't distinguish between a fund is intentional in that it's a responsible fund or it's unintentional. They just happen to have some good holdings, which means that that could change. So there are some ways. I would encourage going to the fund company's websites, check out Morningstar, for you know, a couple of the resources out there.
Yeah, and I think to add to that, especially the companies who are integrating, you know, the environmental social governance, they're really good about telling you what their criteria are. You know, are they looking for, is there an absolute bar they won't invest in any fossil fuels, or are they investing in fossil fuel companies who are better than their peers, for instance? So I think they lay out the criteria that they're using pretty well. I mean, you certainly do have to be an active investor, but luckily the information, it's becoming more transparent and some of that information is readily available on their websites.
All right. I know that CEI isn't allowed to advertise, but Martin on Twitter is saying CEI notes are a great way to invest in growing Maine companies. We have just about a minute left. I want to ask you all, some themes seem to be coming up. It seems as though a lot of these funds focus on the environment and the natural environment. I know we've talked about housing. We've talked about startup companies. What other themes are impact investing funds or projects looking at?
Sure. And I think to just kind of add to your list there, you know, a lot of those can be put under the bucket of just community wealth building. So under this community investing, and that looks just like, how do we have a more inclusive economy? And then the other one, or the other couple that I think are missing there is gender lens investing. So, you know, how is capital, is it being loaned to women entrepreneurs at the same levels? Are women at the same level in terms of board representation, which they are certainly not currently? You know, how many companies have women CEOs? And just using that as a lens to look at investments. And then we kind of touched upon you know, the local food movement, which certainly extends to sustainable agriculture as well.
Okay, that's going to have to be the last comment because we are out of time. Thank you all so much for being here. Nicole Davis, a partner and wealth manager with Veris Wealth Partners. Liz Rogers, Senior Vice President at Coastal Enterprises. And Anthony Eames, a Director of Responsible Investment Strategy for Eaton Vance. We will post some of the resources mentioned on today's program on the Maine Calling Facebook page. John Keimel ran the board today. Sam Dearen answered your calls. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This program will be rebroadcast this evening at 8. Tomorrow on the program, Down East Magazine's Kathleen Fleury, the Portland Press Herald's Greg Kessage, and News Channel 6's Rob Caldwell join me as we look back at the stories that made Maine headlines in May. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.